Welcome to the Anchored Hope Podcast. We're so glad that you gave us a download and that you're listening to our Sunday service. And we hope you have a great experience, but we hope even more that you join us on Sundays at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church. Well, we are starting a brand new series today called While You Are Waiting. It seems like it was just yesterday because I can remember it so well in my head, but it was almost 8-10 years ago. I hurt my shoulder. I woke up one morning and I just could not raise my arm without it hurting. I mean, I'd raise it up to this point and I would feel this huge pinch in the front of my shoulder. I remember specifically how cringeworthy it was to put on my shirt in the morning or to put a jacket on. I just remember it hurt so bad. I remember going and grabbing every doorknob and that twisting motion would just really, really hurt it. And so I rested it for a few weeks. I took off some time from the gym. I thought some rest would make it better, but then it did not change. It did not get any better. So then I went to the doctor. And you know, when you go to the doctor, you expect to get answers, right? When you go to the doctor, you come with a problem and you're expecting to leave with a solution. And that's what I did. And I went to the doctor and we did these different things and they said, well, we don't know what's wrong with it. We won't know until we get an MRI. And so I said, great, well, where's the MRI room? Which room do I need to go to? They said, oh no, it doesn't work like that. You're gonna have to come again. You're gonna have to wait a week or two and you're gonna have to come back so we can take the MRI. And so I waited for my MRI. Then I went and I took the MRI and I got in there and took the MRI and I was kind of excited. I'm like, woo, great, we're gonna take this picture, we're gonna jump out, we're gonna look at that picture, we're gonna find out what's wrong with my shoulder. So we jumped out and I said, all right, so what is it? And the guy looked at me and goes, oh, I'm not a doctor, I'm just the picture taker. I'm like, okay, well, let me take a look at it. let me see, because I really want to know what's wrong with my shoulder. And so the guy did. He handed me my MRI, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So anyway, they're like, well, you're going to have to come back in a week or two, and we'll tell you what's wrong with your shoulder. So I waited again. And so I came back a week or two later, and they said, well, the good news is that, nothing's torn. And I was like, that's great. So what do we do? And they said, well, I don't know. There's a lot of things we could do. We could do a cortisone shot. We could do physical therapy. It's like, let's do it all, okay? And so then I made an appointment, got a cortisone shot. I went to the physical therapist, and first thing I asked my physical therapist was, so how long do you think we're going to be doing this? And he said, well, until it feels better. I'm like, well, how long do you think that'll be? He goes, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it was one of the most excruciating seasons of waiting for me. Because as I'm waiting for solutions, just as I think that we're getting to a point where I'm going to get some good news, I'm going to see a light at the end of the tunnel, I'm going to get a little bit better idea about where the finish line is, all of a sudden, the answers that I keep getting told is, we'll see, we aren't sure, come back later. Again and again and again, I keep running into these answers, and none of these answers are solving any of my problems. That's tough, isn't it? When you're going through a season like that, when all of a sudden you get this new normal presented to you, where you're like, this is your life now. This is your new normal. This is what it's going to feel like every day. And I remember what that was like. I remember every single morning waking up just not wanting to get dressed because of how my shoulder was going to feel. I remember every time, it was my left shoulder, every time I pulled up in the driveway and I had to reach out for food, how much pain I would have as I had to reach out and hand that person my credit card and grab that person the food from that person. I mean, I just remember that. And my whole schedule became, centered around when physical therapy was going to be. And that was my new normal. That was my new life. That was what the season that I was sitting in, and I didn't know when it was going to be over. I didn't know what was going to come next. I didn't know how to fix it. Man, those seasons are hard. We've all felt like that at one point in time in your life. You all probably feel like that right now. And that is why for the next 6 weeks, we're going to dive into While You Are Waiting. And the important question that we're going to dive into is this. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when there's no way forward? There's no way out. What do you do when there's a problem with seemingly no solution, no end in sight, no finish line? What do you do when it is what it is and no one knows how to fix it? No one knows how long it will be. What do you do when you are given a new normal? I mean, what do you do when that happens relationally? When something happens in your marriage or with the person you're dating? What do you do when that happens in your life and in the life of somebody that you love? What do you do when you enter a season where you're like, oh, this is how it's going to be for now. This is going to be our new normal. This is what we're going to wake up with every single day, and this is what we're going to go to bed thinking about every single day. What do you do then? What do you do when that happens financially? When you discover that your financial dreams are just not going to be what they're going to be? What do you do when you find out you have a debt to pay and you're going to be paying it for the foreseeable future? When you get laid off, when you don't have money coming in, and your financial situation just is what it is, and this is your new normal, this is your new budget, this is your new spending amount, what do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when that happens with your health? Well, you're not going to die from this. They can treat this, but they can't cure it. And this is your new normal. Every day you're going to have to take this pill. Every day you're going to have to do this exercise. Everywhere you go, you're going to have to be conscious of this thing, of this disease, of people around you who might be sick. Every day, every week, your life's going to be centered around this part of your health, and you're going to have to adapt your schedule. You're going to have to adapt your eating patterns. What is it you're going to do when there's nothing you can do? When this is your new normal and it's going to affect your health. This is a series for us right now. This is not what I was planning to preach on 6 weeks ago. I had a whole nother series. But you know what? This is what we need right now, because all of us are waiting right now. Every single one of us right now are in this new season where this is our new normal. And we're asking continually, when is this going to be over? What's going to happen next? And the answers are, we'll see, come back later, we don't know. I mean, that's tough to go through in life. And right now, we all have a new normal. Not going to church. Many of us laid off from our jobs. Some of us working from home while also parenting, while also teaching our kids. I mean, wearing face masks to the store, having to be cognizant and conscious of everyone else around us. This is our new normal. So even in the midst of right now, if nothing else, what do you do when there's nothing you can do? What do you do when you get handed a new normal? You know, all of us have a picture of a preferred future, you know, how we think life should be. Everybody keeps talking about, you know, I ask people, how are you doing? They're like, man, I just want life to get back to normal. You have an idea of what you think normal is, right? And you have this preferred future in mind. You have an idea, a picture of how you think marriage should go, finances should go, the economy should go, the government should be run, what life should look like for you and your kids, and what work means and what work looks like. You have these ideas in your mind. But what happens when that preferred future gets messed up, gets twisted, gets changed? What do you do then? The thing is, and the problem is there are options, just not good ones, right? There are a lot of options. There's just not any good ones. You could run, you could quit, you could lash out, and you could drink, you could eat, you could munch, you could become jealous, you could self-medicate, you could become resentful, you could be angry. In these seasons of life, just like the season of life we're in right now, we are tempted by so many terrible options. But the thing is that in the midst of these terrible options, in the midst of us trying to find our way through all of this, there are three lies that we tell ourselves. Three lies, and I want to share them with you. You tell me in the comment section if you resonate with these three lies. The first lie is this: I will never be happy again. I'll never be happy again is the first lie that we tell ourselves. I mean, we tell ourselves this. You just remember when you were a middle schooler, when you were a high schooler. Remember when that boyfriend or that girlfriend, they broke up with you, you know, and you ran home from school or you ran home from the party or you ran home from seeing them and you ran up to your room and you jumped in bed, you threw the covers over you, and as you cried and you weeped, you remember this, Bo? And you were like, man, I'm never going to be happy again. I'm never going to find love again. I'm never going to be happy again. Remember the last time you kind of checked your marriage, after the last fight you had or the last argument you had, and in your relationship, you wondered to yourself, you even told yourself, I don't know if we can ever get back from this. I don't know if we can ever recover. I don't know if our marriage will ever be what it once was. I don't know if we as a couple will ever be happy again. Or how about at your job? Remember, there was a point in time, it's your job. Remember that last time you pulled up to your job and you said, you know what? Is this it? This isn't what I wanted to do with my life. This wasn't my dream job, or this wasn't what I signed up for. This wasn't what I thought this job, or what I thought it would be. I don't think I'll ever be happy again. I don't think I'll ever be fulfilled again doing this job. This is just my life now. I don't know if I'll ever be happy. Or what about with your finances? When you just thought, I don't know if we'll ever recover from this. I don't know if this will ever be what it's supposed to be. I don't know if we're ever going to be happy again. That's the first lie. The second lie is this. Second lie is nothing good can come from this. Nothing good can come from this. There is no glass half empty or glass half full. This is just all empty. That's it. There's nothing in here. There's nothing good in this. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's no lesson to take away. And don't you dare, pastor, for a minute, I will shut this live stream off. If you tell me some Bible story where some person was down on their luck, going through a season, and at the end of it, Jesus showed up and he healed people, he brought people back to life, and everybody lived happily ever after. If that's where you're going, I will shut this live stream off right now. And I want to let you know that the story I'm going to tell you today, it does not end happily ever after. So, stay tuned. And then, the third lie that we tell ourselves is, there's no point in continuing. This is the dark place where there's no point in trying to fix my marriage. There's no point in trying to get ourselves out of this mountain of debt. There's no point in me trying to fight this addiction because this addiction is just going to win. There's no point in me continuing. And the saddest thing of all, the darkest place you could ever go is, you know what? There's no point in continuing to live. That is a sad place. That's a dark place. And some of us have been there before, honestly. What do you do when there's nothing you can do? These three dangerous lies that we feed ourselves, that we hear in our head while we're waiting, in the midst of this, we lose these three things. We lose joy. We lose joy. We lose hope. We lose purpose. We lose this joy and this hope and this purpose because what these three lies tell us. And I get it. I empathize with it. These are normal thoughts and feelings that all of us have. And behind these three lies is a spiritual battle. It's an emotional battle. And it's something that we feel while we're waiting. And it's a spiritual battle that makes us stop going to church, stop praying, stop reading our Bible. And the feeling is this. The feeling is life is out of control and God has let me go. You felt like this, right? That all of these problems, everything you're going through, it's because God is not present in this new normal. You feel, everybody has a different idea about what's going on with God. Some of us feel like this. Some of us feel like God is angry. God is punishing me. God is after me. God is trying to teach me some terrible lesson. I am Job, man. And he is just angry and he is after me. Some of us feel like, you know what? God just doesn't care. God is just on mute. God does not care about little me. I mean, all the millions of people in the world, he doesn't care about me because clearly he's answering everybody else's prayers and he's concerned with everybody else's life, but God just doesn't seem to care about me, about little old me. Or some of us feel like this. We just feel like God is absent. God is absent. And you know what? Maybe God wasn't even real. Maybe there was no God. Because I don't see, I don't feel, I don't hear a God at all. But I want to tell you this morning, if you hear nothing else from this message, I want to tell you this morning that God is not absent, apathetic, or angry. And I know you're struggling to believe that. I know we've all entered seasons of life where we've struggled to believe this. But you know what? I know if you've tuned in today, if you're watching this lesson, if you're watching this live stream, that you haven't completely given up hope. That you are at the very least curious. Curious about what God has to say. Even though you aren't sure that there is a God, even though you're searching, even though you have so many logical facts that explain to you that God is not listening or that God is angry or that God is absent, but still you are here today, which means you're at least open for a conversation, which I appreciate, I applaud you for. I respect you for at least listening and being curious and searching. And I want you to know that your feelings that you have today towards God, they are completely normal. So many people throughout the Bible had these same feelings. There have been millions of people who have walked this earth who have felt how you have felt. And you know what? I want to let you know. I want to give you permission to let God know exactly how you feel because He can take it. He can take it. He can take any emotion that you throw at Him. And you can give Him that. You can tell Him how you feel. But I want to let you know. And my goal is to try to convince you over these next 6 weeks that God is not absent, He is not apathetic, and He is not angry. And just like I told you before, I told you that I would not tell you some Bible story where somebody ended up happily ever after. Actually, my favorite Bible story is not in just one place. It's segmented across the New Testament. And many people don't even know this story because they don't take time to go through the Gospels and to pick up all the pieces of the puzzle and to put together the full picture. But my favorite Bible story is about a man named John the Baptist. And John the Baptist got the shortest end of the stick than anybody. I mean, this guy really got done in. And it's really sad. And how his story ends is sad. But in the midst of his story and in the midst of his life, I think that we can learn something about God and how God is in the midst of our waiting. But also, too, we can see and we can find ourselves in this story. And we can see what our goal should be while we're waiting. And so if you don't know anything about the story of John the Baptist, we hear a little bit about it at the very beginning of Jesus' story. When Mary is pregnant with Jesus, we meet Martha, who Mary goes and stays with. And inside her stomach is John. So just even when, as Mary and Martha were both pregnant, we're introduced to Jesus and John. Then after Jesus is born, we jump to the beginning of Jesus' story. And where does Jesus' story begin? It begins with John the Baptist. John got his name, John the Baptist, because he invented baptism. He came on the scene and started to preach about the gospel before there even was a gospel. And he preached so well that people started to believe that he was actually the Messiah, that he was the one that had been prophesied about and that they had been waiting for many, many years. But every time it came up, he said, no, I'm just the opening act. I'm just introducing you. The one who is to come is greater than I. But he began to preach and tell people, and then he began to baptize people. This was something that he started to do, and so he got this nickname, John the Baptist, John the Baptizer. And then Jesus comes on the scene. Jesus, his cousin of some sort, they were related by family. Jesus comes on the scene, and as soon as he comes on the scene, John points to him and goes, look, there's the one you have been looking for. There's the one you want to see. That's the man you want to talk to. That is the Son of God. And so right there in the midst when the spotlight is on John, as soon as Jesus steps up, John takes the spotlight and he puts it over on Jesus. He makes Jesus greater than himself. He humbles himself. And in the midst of that, even some of John's disciples, people that followed him, people that were part of his crew, his squad, they became curious. And so they walked over to Jesus, and Jesus starts to form his 12 disciples, his squad, his crew. And do you know what he does? He takes John's disciples, one of them being Peter. You remember Peter. We all know how bad of a screw-up Peter was. We just got done talking about it last week. I mean, he takes two of John's disciples and leaves with them. Now, think about this for a minute, all right? Think about if you're John and you're doing a really good job. You're the opening act for Jesus. And then Jesus comes on the scene and Jesus is going to build a team. Jesus is going to build his Avengers initiative, right? And you're doing a really good job. And you would think that he would probably pick you. You'd probably be his first pick. I mean, after all, you're related, you're killing it, you're doing such a good job. But who does he take? Not John. Peter. And he walks off without you. I mean, that would sting for me a little bit. Then it gets even worse. Then Jesus begins his ministry, and he starts to preach right next to John. Not only is he preaching, but he starts to baptize. I mean, come on. This is what John is known for. He's John the Baptizer, and now Jesus is baptizing people in the same water. So guess what happens? The crowds start to shift. All of a sudden, these two people are preaching next to each other, and who do you think is going to win? Of course, Jesus. Come on, have you heard the Sermon on the Mount? So people start to leave John. Not only do John's disciples leave him, but the crowds start to leave them, and Jesus' church grows, and John's gets a little smaller. Now, this angered John's disciples. So John's disciples came up to him and said, "What in the world? What is going on? I mean, this is unfair," is what they say. So, what, I mean, come on. This is John's opportunity to spew. I mean, let the feelings come out, John. Share with us. Admit to us. It's okay to be angry. Go ahead. Tell us your frustrations. Is this frustrating you, John? And this was John's response. John, the disciple, records what John the Baptist said. This is what he says. It goes, to this John replied, "A person can receive only what is given to them from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Messiah, but I am sent ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom, and the friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. He must become greater, and I must become less." Don't you love this guy? I mean, come on. Somebody get this guy a girlfriend. This is a keeper right here. He is so kind, so nice. I mean, listen to him. He goes, I'm not the bride. I'm just the bride's friend is all I am. You know, don't worry about me. He must become greater. I must become less. I mean, so humble. I mean, why didn't Jesus pick this guy? Come on. This is the perfect candidate right here. I mean, he's great. And then what happens later, a short time later, is that John is arrested. John is arrested because every time he got the chance to preach, he spoke out against King Herod. And specifically what he spoke out about it with King Herod is that King Herod had run off with his brother's wife, whom was his sister's daughter. You connecting all that? King Herod ran off with his brother's wife, who was his sister's daughter. It was his niece, okay? This is some Tiger King level stuff right here going on, all right? Somebody get Netflix on this, because this is what I want to watch next. And so King Herod wasn't very bothered about it for a little while, but then his wife, she didn't like it. You know how teenagers can get sometimes, you know, when they get gossiped about? And so King Herod's niece, you know, saw John preaching on Instagram and was like, this is not cool. You know, don't talk about me like that. And so she convinced King Herod to go after John. And so John was arrested. And John was put into a desert dungeon where there was no court date, no sentence, nothing like that. They just sat you there and they kept you there until they remembered you were there and remembered they wanted to kill you, or until you died in prison. They really didn't care. They just stuck you there to rot. And so they put John in a dungeon. And what do you think Jesus did? Well, I'm going to tell you, and Matthew tells us what Jesus did. When Jesus heard that John had put him in prison, he planned to break his cousin out. First, he sent food from heaven. then angels to break his chains. Then he turned to his disciples and said, "Disciples, assemble!" And they stormed the prison to save the cousin of Jesus. That's not really true. I don't know how much Bible you know, but that's not real. I made that up. Because that's what we would expect if this was a movie, you know, if this was a movie coming out, that's what you would think. That's what you would do if your cousin was in jail. No, let me actually, this is the real verse, all right? This isn't the Michael made-up version of the Bible. This is the real thing. When Jesus heard that John had been put in prison, he withdrew to Galilee, leaving Nazareth. He went to and lived in Capernaum, which was by the lake. Okay, so let's recap here. John, the cousin of Jesus, not only got his career torpedoed by Jesus, not only did Jesus take his friends and his disciples, but then when John was in prison, Jesus went to the beach. And if you ever looked at this on a map, if you ever looked at where these two locations were, John was in a dungeon in the desert, and about 120 miles north was Jesus' new lake house. It was a day's walk from each other. And there is nowhere recorded, and we can tell by later on by what John says, that Jesus didn't visit John once. And he could have. He should have. Actually, when you were put in this dungeon, the only way that you were kept alive is by visitors visiting you and bringing you food. So John's disciples kept him alive and brought him food every single day. But how many times did Jesus visit? None. And John sits there in prison, in this dungeon, for a year and a half while Jesus is at the lake. Wow. Can you imagine how that must have felt? I told you, this is not a happy story. And this is not a story with a happy ending. Imagine how John must have felt in that moment. And so John sits in that dungeon for a year to a year and a half. And so finally he starts to hear the rumors and the stories about Jesus, probably some of it through his disciples about what is happening. And so John gets to his point and he sends his disciples to give a message to Jesus. And this is what happens next. In Matthew 11, it says, when John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" So Jesus was in Galilee, and these disciples walk up to him, and they ask him this question. They go, "We represent John, and he has a question for you." This is what he says. He says, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" John has clearly reached his breaking point. He was saying, "I've heard many stories about you being people's savior. So can I ask you, cousin, when are you going to be my savior? I've heard about you doing so much good for everybody else. Have you forgotten about me? Have you forgotten about what I did for you? Remember, we're cousins. Remember how my mother was there for your mother when she was at her end? Remember whenever I baptized you? Remember when I came and I was your opening act and I pointed to you, man. I made you look good. I pointed everybody to you. Remember when I did all that? Remember when I let you take my baptisms? I let you take my disciples? Remember when I just let it all go and I didn't ask for anything during that entire time? Well, now I have sat here for a year and a half and I would love to know when you're going to be everybody's savior, because it seems like you just don't want to be mine." How would you feel? How do you think Jesus felt whenever he heard that? And all these disciples are listening and everybody's watching. And John and Jesus, he replies and he tells them to go and to tell John this. Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and what you see. Tell him that the blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor." Wow. Now, these disciples of John, they would not understand what this would mean. The people listening probably didn't understand what it meant, because it even sounds kind of cold reading it out of context and not knowing everything about John and what John stood for. But do you know what John would hear when he heard this? When this message got to John, what John would have heard is, John, remember our mission? Remember why we both started this? Remember what this was all about? Remember that this was about them. This was about the people. This was about the broken. This was about the sinner. This was about the lame. Remember what our mission was, to make disciples, to have lead everybody to a growing relationship with Jesus, to bring the kingdom to light, to be salt and light on this earth. Well, hey, John, let me tell you, let me give you the good news. Guess what, buddy? It's working. The blind are seeing, the lame are walking, the lepers have been cleansed, the deaf can hear, the dead are being raised, and the good news is being proclaimed to the poor. What you set out to do, the work that you put in, it is paying off. The good news, John, is that everything that you did and everything you set up, everything you started, I am finishing it, and it is working, and it is good, and people's lives are being changed. So, John, don't lose hope now. Don't become short-sighted. Understand that your world is bad and it's this small, but understand in the greater context, in the greater good, there are some incredible things happening, John, and it's things that you once wanted. It's things that you once stood for. Remember when you said that I must become greater and you must become less? Well, it's happening. Remember when you called me the bridegroom and you were just the best friend? Well, I'm telling you, it is working, John. Is that still what you want? Is that still your mission? Is that still what you're after? I think what Jesus would say to us, and what he wants to hear us, what he wants to say to us in the midst of our discomfort is this: don't let the bad happening in your world dismiss the good I'm doing in the world. You know, when you're in a season of waiting, when you're in the season, a season of discomfort, all you see is your world. Your viewpoint is this small. And all you see is your world. And when your world is bad, you think the whole world is bad. But here's the thing. You've got to not make it all about you, because you are not the center of the universe. You hear me? Give me an amen in the comment section if you're understanding this, all right? You are not in the center of the universe. The greater world is bigger. And don't dismiss, don't take what's going on bad in your life and dismiss all the good that God is doing in the world. Because it is not all about you. You cannot become self-centered in the midst of your pain. You cannot make it all about you. And then Jesus says something so powerful. He says this, he says, blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. Ooh, gut check. We've talked about what that word blessed means. It means happy, it means joyful, it means fulfilled. Jesus is saying, happy, blessed is anyone who does not stumble because I didn't do what they wanted. Blessed, happy, joyful, more whole is anybody who is fulfilled, who still believes, regardless of what I did or what I didn't do, regardless of what prayers I answered or didn't answer, regardless of what I did or didn't do, regardless of your change of circumstances, blessed is the person that trusts in me and believes in me in spite of me. That person will be blessed. That person will be able to find happiness. That person will be able to be fulfilled. Not based on their circumstances, but based on who I am and what I'm doing, not just in their world, but in the world. This is a powerful statement, a hard thing to comprehend. And then John's men, they leave, and Jesus, he gathers everybody around. He goes, everybody come here. I got something important to say. Everybody get over here. He gathers all of his disciples. He's got way more than 12 at this point. He's got a crowd at this point. And this is what he says about John. Jesus says, truly I tell you, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. You know what Jesus does in that moment? Jesus says, I want everybody to hear something. Something he didn't say about anybody else. He goes, there is no human being I respect more than John. He is the MVP. He is the GOAT. He is the greatest of all time. Let me tell you something. There is no one better than John the Baptist. He is the greatest of any man who has ever been born to a woman. Yet here's what makes him so great. Whoever is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. You know why? Because John always puts the person beside him in front of him. If he was in line and he was in front of somebody, he'd say, no, I'm in the back of the line. I'm in the back of the line. You guys get in front of me. You guys go ahead. Even though John deserves to be first, he always makes himself second. He is that good. He is that awesome because he knows that the way to best illustrate his love for God is to love people around him. So that man is a giver. And I'm telling you right now, that man has just sent somebody to ask me a question, but he is not going to ask another thing from me. And he didn't. And Jesus knew he wouldn't. You know why? Because John is that awesome. Because John is the greatest among us. Why? Because of how he loves others and how he loves his God. Because he has always made others greater and he has constantly made himself less. I mean, think about that. What a compliment. What an accomplishment. And yet, a short time later, King Herod remembers about John and he takes him and he beheads him. And kills him. Told you the story didn't end happily ever after. John waited in prison, and Jesus didn't show up and save him, and he didn't resurrect him. He got killed, and he died. Now that's a sad way to end the story, right? That's a sad way to go. But is that the saddest ending? Because you know what? Even though he died, even though he was beheaded, because of how John responded to his new normal, he went down as the greatest of all time in Jesus' book. To the point where we're talking about him 2,000 years later. He's my Bible hero. He's my guy. He's the guy I hope to be like. Because of how he sacrificed himself, how he put the person beside him in front of him, how he made himself less and made everyone else greater. Let me ask you something. How is it that you want to be remembered? What is the story that you want told? There's a question I want to ask you. In the midst of this COVID-19, that's going to be on the screen, in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic, let me ask you this story, or this question. Go to the next slide for me. I'm going to come back to that. The next one. When the story of COVID-19 is just a story to tell, let's make sure our stories are worth telling. What story are you going to tell? When COVID-19 is just a story, when this passes and this becomes history, what story are you, what's going to be told about you? How are you going to say you responded? How are your kids going to remember how you responded? How are you going to be remembered? Are you going to be remembered for, you know, storing things up for yourself, making sure you're taken care of? Or are you going to be remembered as the person who put the person beside them in front of them? Are you going to be remembered for making yourself greater, safer? Or are you going to be remembered for making God and others greater and yourself less? Are you going to be the bridegroom, or are you going to be the friend of the bride? What are you going to be remembered as? What's your story? What's your legacy that's going to be told one day at your funeral once this thing blows over? When the story of COVID-19 is just a story to tell, let's make sure our stories are stories worth telling. In the midst of your waiting, in the midst of your normal, three lies you believe, three lies you tell yourself. We're going to put them on the screen again. I'll never be happy again. Nothing good can come from this, and there's no point in continuing. Well, you know what? I want to tell you something. I want to tell you right now that you can be happy. I want you to tell yourself this over the next 6 weeks. I can be happy. I can be happy. You know what? If your happiness is built on circumstances, you will always find a way to be unhappy. Because your circumstances are always going to change. There are things in your life that you are not in control of, that you cannot stop. And when that season comes and you're in a new season of waiting, you will most definitely not be happy unless you can find a way to be happy. So you've got to tell yourself, I can be happy. And you know what? You need to tell yourself too, something good can come from this. I have no clue what it is. Just as we've talked about through our whole last series, as we've talked about many stories, God is not behind this, but God can use this. God didn't do this to us, but he can take anything and he can repurpose this. Not all pain has a purpose, but God can bring purpose to anything. You know what? Something good can come from this. I want you to say this with me right now, in your home, in your living room, as you watch this on your TV, I want you to hear it say this. Something good can come from this. You've already heard from the Olsons and their stories, some of the things, some of the ways they've reconnected with their kids that they've just adopted. As they're around their kids, as they're working from home and they're teaching their kids and they're around each other, they're connecting in a way that they've never experienced before. You know what? You don't know. Don't take all the bad that's happening in your world and discount all the good that God is doing in the world. There is good that can come out of this. And we may see it and we may not. But don't discount what God can do. And God can bring purpose to this pain. There is a point to continuing. There is a point to continuing. Don't give up hope. Don't give up on your marriage. Don't give up on your finances. Don't give up on your health. This is the time, right now, more than ever, to wake up. To wake up, to get up, to prioritize your life, to take care of yourself, to take care of the people around you, to take care of the people you love, to get close to God, to get on your knees, to pray to him. And God, if you turn to him, blessed is the person in the midst of this who turns to him, and he can give purpose to this. And it may be in something that you see in your life, or it may not. It may be something that's seen in another life or another generation or another family. But God can do it. God can bring purpose to this pain. So don't give up. Don't tap out. Because when COVID-19 is just a story, when this season of your life, when this health scare, when what's going on in your marriage right now, when it's just a story to tell, I want you to make sure you have a good story to tell. I want you to look back on this and not feel guilt or shame. I want you to have pride. I want Jesus to be able to gather people around and say, let me tell you about how they handled this. Let me tell you the story of one of the MVPs, one of the goats, one of the awesome ones. Let me tell you how proud of them I am. That's what I want for you. Is that what you want for yourself? I want to pray for you this morning. And we're going to talk about this for the next 6 weeks. My prayer is that these next 6 weeks would be a transforming time for our church, for our life, for our community, for you. That in the midst of this waiting, you would be able to find hope, joy, and purpose. That you would understand that God has not abandoned you. He is not apathetic and he is not angry. And that he loves you very, very much. Same way that he loved John. And that he is doing good things in the world. Great things. And he wants you to participate in them. He wants you to play a part. He wants your story to be told when it's told. So will you pray for me this morning? God, this morning we come to you. In the midst of this new season, in the midst of this new normal, in a season where there's nothing to do. What do we do when there's nothing we can do? Well, God, we turn to you. And God, blessed is the person who can believe in you, who can trust in you, even though we're waiting, even though we can't see you, even though we wonder if you're not there. God, this morning we are believing that you are not angry, you are not apathetic, and you are not angry, that you are with us. That your heart breaks with us, that you see where we are and what we're going through. And that you have not abandoned us, but that God, you love us very, very much. God, would you help us to see outside of our world? Help us to see beyond just our world and the bad that's going on in it, and help us to see the good that you are doing in the world. And would we be like John? Would we put the person beside us, in front of us? Would we make ourselves less so that you can become greater? God, we thank you and we pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to AnchoredHope.Church. We would love it if you hit the subscribe button and even give us a review, and plan your visit to Anchored Hope Church at 211 Boone Street at www.anchoredhope.church.